Not unusual for cities to have seven churches come for a Good Friday service on a Friday. Now, I've done it in Amarillo, preached at First Presbyterian, and I think I got I Am Thirsty, which isn't the easiest one to make a sermon out of. And in Washington, D.C., there will be seven churches get together on a Good Friday, kind of in the subsection of the city. And each would take one of the seven sayings from the cross. Luke 23, our study today, will give three of the sayings of the cross. John 19 gives three more different ones. And then just one in Matthew and Mark. They'll just, my God, why have you forsaken me? They had seven. The death of the Lord Jesus Christ is the most important topic, but as we come to Luke 23:33, we'll also begin with, do we know where this was? So please come to Luke 23, and we went all the way through verse 32 last week, and now we'll do verse 33. When they came, that's the procession, when they came to the place called the Skull, there they crucified him, and the criminals, one on the right, the other on the left. Last week's section had Jesus could not carry his cross. The cross bar, probably the top and the posts were always out there. The body kept falling over from all of his beatings. And they got Simon the Cyrene impressed to carry the cross. Verse 33 says, now they went to the place of the skull. No surprise, the original word for skull is cranium. That's the word actually that Luke uses here. So that is Greek for skull. Aramaic for skull is Golgotha. Latin for skull is Calvary. So it doesn't matter which one you do, whether you do Latin or Greek or Aramaic, all of them say skull. It could be this place looked like a skull, or it could just mean this is the place of execution where people were dying. In Israel, there are two locations shown now to people that could be the place of the cross. One looks like a skull. Personally, I don't believe that at all. It was only first identified as the place of the cross in 1885 by a British general. No previous references at all to it. Might look like a skull. The Church of the Holy Sepulchre doesn't look like a skull. It looks like a church. It's built over a rock. That one may not go all the way back to Jesus, but it goes back a long ways. It goes back to at least around AD 135. The evil Emperor Hadrian had them put up a Venus statue on a place identified as the place of the cross. And so what happened years later when Helena, the mother of Constantine, they made Christianity legal and they say, where did he die? Well, right over there where that Venus statue is. So it does go back to about AD 135, and that's a long ways back, all the way back, but if the Christians could remember where the place was. In the past, there was some objection to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre because it is now inside the city, and of course Jesus died outside the gates, Hebrews 13. But that actually gives it some evidence because it was outside the gates until AD 41. So there's only about 10 years in there, and they built bigger walls. But when Jesus died on the cross, it was outside the gates, and it goes back a long way. So I would say the Church of the Holy Sepulchre has the strongest evidence for it. Doesn't matter what language you use, it's the place of the skull. Verse 33, there were three crosses. No reference to nails. Now, in the Old Testament prophecy, they pierced my hands and my feet, Psalm 22:16, but no reference to nails. No reference to nails in Matthew, no reference to nails in Mark, no reference to nails to Luke. In the actual crucifixion section in John, there's no reference to nails. It only comes later with doubting Thomas, and even then it's not nails. Jesus says, here are my hands. I say this because the gospel writers were writing the events as they happened. No one could say they were making up details of the story that would fit fulfilled Old Testament prophecy. There's going to be a lot of these. Well, they will leave out any reference to it being a fulfilled messianic prophecy, but it clearly was. And what that means is Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John were just writing the story as it happened, and not crafting a story to fit the Old Testament. No reference to nails. They were just giving and writing the events as they happened, and the fulfilled prophecy comes clearer later. We look at it and say that definitely is fulfilled prophecy. But they were not making up a story to fit the Old Testament words. They were very often leaving it out. There'll be another one coming here in the next verse, where they are casting lots for his garments. No reference to that being in the Old Testament here. They're just writing the story as it happens. We look back at it and say that's fulfilled prophecy. Let's go ahead to verse 34. Two sentences. And one is factual, what Jesus said on the cross. The other one is about the garments. Verse 34, but Jesus was saying, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. And they cast lots, dividing up his garments among themselves. Now, he's not praying that they'll go to heaven. He's not saying forgive them in the sense of saving forgiveness, but delay any punishment. Delay any punishment for all the wrongs they were doing to put Jesus on the cross and the mistreatment at the trials, the unfair trials, mistreatment at the beatings. Father, forgive them in the sense of delaying any punishment for this. Give them some more time. Jesus' second coming will be punishment. Jesus' first coming, full of grace and truth. John 1:14. So, hold off any punishment for them. They don't know what they're doing. Next, they cast lots, dividing up his garments. That also is in the Old Testament. Luke doesn't mention it. And that's actually good for apologetics, because it means Luke wasn't crafting a story to fit the Old Testament. He didn't even bring it in. It fits the Old Testament. It is fulfilled messianic prophecy, but he didn't bring it in, which actually makes it stronger. So, they divided up my garments among them, and for my clothing they cast lots. Psalm 22:18. John does mention that the same thing, and he does mention that this did fulfill, but not Matthew, Mark, and Luke. They wrote these prophecies 1,000 years before Jesus. And often when the gospel writers write about the story of Jesus, they give just the facts. And they leave out any reference to fulfilled prophecy. And that shows that they were giving just the facts and not crafting it to make it fit. Let's move on to verse 35 now. And the people stood by looking on. The Laos, the laity, the general people, they kind of got along with Jesus. Now, not the rulers, continuing verse 35, and even the rulers were sneering at him, saying, he saved others, let him save himself, if this is the Christ of God, his chosen one. So he said that he could save everybody else. Now, let's see if he can save himself from the cross. He says he is the Christos, the anointed one. Hebrew word is Messiah, the anointed one, meaning the same. Now there are references in Matthew 12:18, quoting Isaiah, that this is my beloved, whom I have chosen, in him I am well pleased. So it does say in one other verse he is chosen, but the name chosen one, that's here. That's the only one I know of as a capital C name for Jesus, the chosen one. So it's very, very common, and they're making movies about the life of Jesus right now called The Chosen One. It is biblical, but I think it's interesting. It's here. Basically, Luke is the one that puts that quote in there, that his enemies called him the Chosen One. They, of course, are making fun of it. But Isaiah had said that he is the servant, and he is chosen of God. And so the name Chosen One fits. 36 and 37. The soldiers also mocked him, coming up to him, offering him sour wine, and saying, "If you are the King of the Jews, save yourself." Here's another one. Matthew 69:21, written by King David, saying that they gave me gall to drink. That's painkiller, by the way. They gave me gall or painkiller to drink, and they offered me some sour wine or vinegar for my food. Old Testament parallel with David. Is it mentioned here that it was? No. Is it mentioned? No. But what that shows you is they were just writing the facts, just writing that this happened. And they weren't making up a story to fit the Old Testament prophecies. They do fit the Old Testament prophecies, but they don't catch it at the time. In some cases, the author catches it, but very often not. Like in John 19, it says, "They shall look upon me whom they have pierced." And he's quoting Zechariah 12:10. So once in a while they catch an Old Testament prophecy, but more than often not. That actually makes it stronger. They were writing history. They were not putting in things that may not have been true in order to fulfill the Old Testament wording. Very often they didn't catch the Old Testament wording. Well, they would divide my garments, and they would give wounds to my hands and feet, and they would give me, those are Psalm 22, Psalm 63, they would give me painkiller to drink and sour wine. He wouldn't take the painkiller. He wanted to have the full pain of paying for our sins. Verse 38. Now there was also an inscription above him, "This is the King of the Jews." Romans would put a penalty plaque above the cross. This is the reason that there was an execution for a death penalty. Pilate didn't believe there was any reason for a death penalty. And Pilate will back and forth trying to make the Jews happy, like the emperor had written him a letter and told him to keep the Jews happy. But Pilate had limits. I mean, I think he was really sick of being pushed into this. So he put above it, "This is the King of the Jews." And if you have a little bit different phrases in other Gospels, that's because it was in Aramaic, it was in Latin, it was in Greek. So it just depends which language you're reading. This is Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews. Or some would just say, "the King of the Jews." They're not contradicting each other. They're either quoting different parts of the placard or the different languages, because it was up there in different languages. Pilate had asked Jesus, "Are you the king?" And basically Jesus said he was the King of Truth. "My kingdom is not of this world yet." And everybody who is of truth will listen to him. And then Pilate sneered, "What is truth?" In the same John 19 narrative, they wanted to take away this plaque. The Jews made him mad. The King of the Jews, they want that off. And in John 19:22, what I have written, I have written. So even though they were really pressuring Pilate, even from the Caesar back in Rome, he just about had it with him. So what had Jesus done? He had claimed to be the King of the Jews. And what I have written, I have written. Other Gospels mentioned two criminals beside him on the cross, but Luke, sometimes Luke leaves things out, and sometimes Luke adds it. Here, Luke adds the conversation with Jesus and one of the criminals on the cross next to him. So, only in Luke. Let's read about that, verse 39. One of the criminals who was hanged there was hurling abuse at him, saying, "Are you not the Anointed One? Save yourself and us." But the other answered and rebuked him, "Do you not even fear God, since you are under the same sentence of condemnation? And indeed we are suffering justly for receiving what we deserve for our deeds. This man has done nothing wrong." And he was saying to Jesus, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." And now we have another quote from Jesus. And he said to him, "Truly I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise." Well, seems like the Luke wanted to include this. He wanted to include the clear teaching of Jesus of life after death. And we might add conscious life after death. There are some teachers, I don't think it's true of any one denomination, or just some teachers all through the thing that talk about soul sleep, that when a Christian dies, they do exist, but they're over there sleeping somewhere. That seems very mixed up to me. Today you will be with me in paradise, and it seems like he was conscious. We have in the Book of Revelation, people have departed. They are wearing robes and singing and that kind of thing. So, wouldn't accept soul sleep. There is immediate life after death and immediate consciousness. The Greek word is paradise. Kind of a weird word. It's actually Persian. And it seems like the Jews that were in exile, and when they came back and the Persians let them go home, they picked up this word paradise. And very often there it was a garden or a park. So the Jewish word for afterlife is like garden or park. Will there be a garden or park? Well, it seems like eventually it will be a restored Eden, and that would be a park. And the heavenly city will have a river of life flowing out of it, and trees of life, and people will eat of its fruit. So, seems like paradise kind of makes sense for the afterlife. And like the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, only later on. It is very common, though, to think that before Jesus ascended up, that believers did not go up. The Lord Jesus Christ was the very first in a resurrected body to go up, and he took believers with him. Very old belief that when he died on the cross, he first went down. That the paradise of the Old Testament was a saved compartment and an unsaved compartment. That befitting the story of the rich man and Lazarus near Abraham. But the rich man is an unbeliever and he dies and he's in torment, but he can talk to Abraham. "Come send Lazarus here. I need some water." And the answer is no one can cross. There is a great chasm. That's the original word. You can't cross back and forth. So it's very common to believe that when Jesus first died, he went down before the resurrection. And 1 Peter 3:18, he preached to the spirits who are now in prison. So very common in the early church. The Apostles' Creed was written in the first century, and we won't look it up. It's in the back of the hymn books. So if you ever want to read all these old creeds, they're in the back of the hymn book that we have here. I think it's kind of strong to think that when Jesus died, he went down. And that later, when he went up, is when he took the Old Testament saints up. He led captivity captive, but he was the first resurrected person, the first in a glorified body to ever go up, and that maybe he went down. Don't have to believe that. It's just very, very old. Now we have his death, and it turned dark, verses 44 and 45. That was about the sixth hour, and darkness fell over the whole land until the ninth hour, noon to three. The sun being obscured, and the veil of the temple was torn in two. Stop a little bit about the darkness. People that were in the city could tell whether it got dark for 3 hours or not. People in the city could tell whether there was an earthquake or not. All the priests could tell whether the veil in the temple was ripped top to bottom so that there was a way of opening from the holy place into the Holy of Holies. And by the way, it was a very thick veil, a hand breadth. That's a lot thicker than the drapes we have in the church, the drapes we have in our house. A hand breadth, ripped from top to bottom. And many of the priests were obedient to the faith, Acts chapter 6. So it seems like, the very public events of the crucifixion would have been known. It got dark. There was an earthquake. The veil of the temple ripped. And it seemed like many of the priests did believe the veil of the temple was ripped, or the rest of the story would have not been believable. And earthquake, the darkness is mentioned, and I have the dates, AD 52 and AD 80. Phallus is one name, Phlegnon is the other. I put it in a footnote in the book on Jesus and history. It's in footnote 206, but several ancient authors, not long afterwards, ancient authors of the time talked about it got dark. And evidently it wasn't just dark in Jerusalem. It might have been dark everywhere, because they refer to it also. One pagan say it must have been an eclipse. And then the Jewish Christians write back is... Passover doesn't happen at the time of the eclipse. It's time not to happen at the time of the eclipse. So it looks like it did get dark, and everybody knew that. And there was an earthquake in Jerusalem, and everybody knew that. And the veil in the temple was ripped top to bottom, and all the priests knew that. That's why so many of them became believers. And we're coming to the centurion's words a little bit, but maybe he saw it got dark and there was an earthquake too. But first, we read verse 46. Jesus crying out with a loud voice, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." Having said this, he breathed his last. Well, here are the sayings of Jesus from the cross. Luke has three. Luke, "Father, forgive them, and do not know what they're doing." Luke, "Today you will be with me in paradise." John, Mother Mary was there, and the Apostle John was there. Behold your son, behold your mother. Matthew and Mark, my God, why have you forsaken me?" I might refer to that before we do communion. "I thirst," John. "It is finished," and again, "paid in full." It is finished would be life is finished. Keeping of the law is finished. Paid in full, tetelestai. So let's go ahead and read about the centurion now. Verse 47. "Now when the centurion saw what had happened, he began praising God, saying, 'Certainly this man was innocent.'" Well, I don't know enough about military. What is the ruler of 100 now? Major? Captain Major or Colonel? But probably Colonel's too high. Captain or Major or something like that. Ruler of 100? And then he was out there and he saw it get dark all this time and felt the earthquake and heard Jesus talking. And so he said he was innocent here, but the Matthew 27:54, truly this is the Son of God. Theologically, that one in Matthew is a little bit stronger. So maybe the centurion at the cross became a believer. Truly, this was the Son of God. Definitely died. One of the evil arguments against the resurrection is the swoon theory, that he never died at all. And yet later, he got in the grave and just got better and came out. Well, John says in John 19 that he saw water and blood come out of him, and the serum and the blood is an indication that he was dead, let alone stabbing him and telling Pilate he's dead, and they knew an executed person when they saw it. But water and blood, well, that's actually a Journal of the American Medical Association did a study on the cross, and that was the main argument in it, that the separation of the watery serum and the blood shows that he was dead. Which means there was no swooning. They can't say that. He's a goner. That, and they'll wrap him up now. Let's continue to read about that. Verses 48 and following. And all the crowds who came together for this spectacle, when they observed what had happened, began to return, going back to town, beating their breasts. And all his acquaintances and the women who accompanied him from Galilee were standing at a distance, seeing these things. Now let's go ahead and do burial. So next week, or 2 weeks, can be a resurrection. Verse 50. And a man named Joseph, who was also a member of the council, a good and righteous man, he had not consented to their plan and action. A man from Arimathea, city of the Jews, who was waiting for the kingdom of God, this man went to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. And he took it down and wrapped it in a linen cloth and laid it in a tomb cut in a rock which no one had ever laid. It was the preparation day and the Sabbath was about to begin. Now the women who had come out with him out of Galilee followed and saw the tomb and how his body was laid. Then they returned and prepared spices and perfumes, and on the Sabbath day they rested according to the commandment. So you have a good member of the council. What that means is when they had their trial of Jesus, they didn't invite certain people. We call that judge shopping. One-third of the Sanhedrin had to be at a death penalty court. So there are 70 of them. 23 or 24 of them had to be there, and they just picked the ones they knew that would rule a certain way. And they left the other ones out. No reference to the great teacher Nicodemus, to whom Jesus said, "You must be born again." He wasn't invited. Joseph of Arimathea didn't agree with him. He was not invited. So they just picked selected people to come to the trial and give him a death penalty. Pilate made sure he was dead. No swoon theory. They wrapped him up in linen, so he couldn't breathe anyway. So Pilate knew he was dead, and if not, he was dead, and no swoon theory. Another fulfillment of prophecy here, that he would be numbered with the transgressors, but with the rich in death. That's kind of what happened. Joseph of Arimathea gave him the tomb, so he was with a rich person in death. So the chief priests were supposed to rest too. They didn't. Go to Pilate, give us a guard. On the cross, Jesus started with, "Father, forgive them. They do not know what they're doing," which would be at least delay punishment for now. Give them time for grace. Verse 35 here has chosen one. It's common in American language, and it is in the Bible, but it's not in too many verses. It's right here in verse 35. He's the chosen one. Many Old Testament fulfilled prophecies, very often the author does not say it's an Old Testament fulfilled prophecy. And that actually is good, because it means that they're just writing what happened, and they weren't making up any kind of story to fit the Old Testament, because it did not even occur to them that this was a fulfillment. And now looking back at it, it shows that it's a fulfillment. Wounds to hands and feet, gambling for a special garment, offered him gall or painkiller, he would not take it. The thief on the cross, the main message there is life after death, and it is a form of paradise, like a park, like a garden, like a happy place. And Jesus said, you will see me today. So the centurion is a believer. This is the Son of God. We're almost to the resurrection where we can have a second Easter, but first we'll have Mother's Day, and then we'll have a second Easter. Will the musicians please come?